worry about your sanity levels. Okay. I guess I'm doing the introduction today.
Yep.
Welcome to Virtual Economy, a podcast about the business of games for the rest of us. We're your hosts. I'm Amanda Farrow.
And I'm Michael Footer.
Each episode will cover the biggest business beats and bring in expert commentary from lawyers, analysts, and industry pros. This is episode 90. Bobby Kotick is paid too much.
Agreed. Thanks for listening to Virtual Economy. This has been episode 90.
So, if you can't guess by the title, guess who's back?
Yeah, seriously.
CTW back.
Oh, yeah. Very excited about that. But we're starting somewhere else. We're going to have another conversation about Crunch. But wait, this time, it's good.
It's actually a good conversation. This was such a wholesome exchange from a bunch of different developers. Mike, what is the framing on this story? Why is this a good Crunch story?
So, you may be aware that Ratchet & Clank Rift Apart, the latest game in the Ratchet & Clank series from Insomniac Games, has recently come out and it came out to great reviews. I mean, there were some quibbles here and there. I have it over here. I am very excited to start playing it in July at some point. But
So August, you mean?
Shh. Let me have this dream.
Is that your I dreamed a dream?
Yes, that is. I dreamed a dream of a robot and also a furry lumbax. Developers at Insomniac have taken to Twitter to praise studio leadership for enforcing a no crunch project.
That's so great. So Lindsay Thompson, an animator at the studio, tweeted out, quote, I didn't crunch once the entire production. A couple of late nights here and there finishing something up, but completely crunch free. It is possible. Team wellness lets the creativity flow free. Yes, I will also add that I speak for myself. I do believe the team as a whole did not suffer crunch, and our management certainly encouraged that.
Additionally, Grant Parker, who's a game designer at Insomniac, said, quote, I'd appreciate people sharing this positive because it's important. Ratchet & Clank PS5 is at an 89 average score, and I can't speak for anyone on the team but myself, but I didn't crunch once. 40-hour weeks the whole time. It is possible to work on a great game without suffering. Something others have pointed out, which is worth mentioning, I can only speak for myself. I'm a white, cis, straight male designer, so I'm also working with some privilege for sure, but overall, I was very encouraged by how my managers actively pushed for me to avoid burnout.
And Jeff Wiedner, an animator at Insomniac, this was in response to Grant Parker's tweet. Quote, this is very true. I worked hard, but never was compelled to crunch. If I put in extra hours, it was my choice because I had something I was really excited about and wanted it to look stellar. But I was actively encouraged by my leads and management to keep my life in balance. And I did. I know a bunch of us speaking out may feel artificial, but one, no, it's not. No one asked me to say anything about my work habits or time spent making the game. And two, it's important for people to know we don't need to crunch like crazy to make great games.
This is huge for a variety of reasons. First, it's a first-party studio with a marquee title that is exclusive to Sony's new console.
It's a AAA studio that has built some of the most acclaimed and, quite frankly, interesting games on console, specifically for PlayStation.
Absolutely. Well, and we can't forget Sunset Overdrive.
I will never forget Sunset Overdrive.
Bring us more Sunset Overdrive. In fact, I love that game so much.
In fact, I'm going to create a little summoning circle right here. And Sunset Overdrive 2 or Sunset Overdrive Plus or whatever. Super Sunset Overdrive.
Super Sunset Overdrive. Fizzy Returns.
I'm good with all of that. That would be so great. So this is such a great conversation, though. It genuinely is.
And I wanted to kick off the show with this because we talk about crunch a lot on the show. And usually it's, oh, look at how terrible this was. We talked about it so much with regard to CD Projekt and
Cyberpunk.
But this we have to elevate the good stories. Elevate the moments where, hey, we've said this is possible. We've said, and not just us, obviously, but developers have said it is possible to make great games without crunch. And Ratchet and Clank and Insomniac have shown that, leading in a way where there was a lot riding on this game.
There was, absolutely, because this was like the big title that everyone was so excited about because it's Ratchet and freaking Clank, man.
And especially since Horizon might not come out this year. It's they're hopeful, but it's not set in stone yet.
No, it absolutely isn't. I think the other portion of this conversation is that because this is such a large studio with such a large project, and it, quite frankly, that worked on a number of large projects, including Spider-Man and Miles Morales.
Yes.
I think that it's important to recognize that the crunch conversation that we normally have is, well, smaller studios don't have to crunch because there are fewer people and because, you know, they're not an 800-pound gorilla. If you think that Insomniac is small, it is not.
I think what's interesting to me here is not just the overt crunch, but we talk about the subtle crunch culture, where these developers have said, hey, look, there were a couple nights I worked a little bit late because there was something I wanted to do. But overall, my bosses were saying, no, 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 we are actively telling you not to crunch. We want you to take care of yourselves.
Because that's where the creativity at the core lies. It's when people are well rested, they're well taken care of. They don't necessarily have to it doesn't have to be one or the other, and it needs to be both.
Yes, absolutely. So that's a fantastic kickoff to the story. We do have an update on a different story. You might recall we talked about Scavenger Studio. There was a report back in January of this year. Games Industry broke the story, and it was talking about Scavenger Studio culture of toxic behavior from that studio's leadership.
Yeah.
And they're working on Season, which garnered a lot of attention last year.
Season looks so good, and I still am excited to play that game when it comes out. So here's some of the background on this. 9 current and former employees of Scavenger Studios levied public accusations of a toxic work environment perpetuated by creative director, Simon Darveaux, that included belittling remarks, groping female employees, sexist remarks, and drunken behavior in the office.
In response, Scavengers suspended him and his romantic partner, CEO Amélie Lamarche, in January and promoted the director of operations, Daisy Lily Best, to chief operating officer, reporting directly to the board. They also conducted an audit with an outside consulting group, Solertia Consulting Group, and 85% of employees participated in that audit.
The consultants determined that there are workplace behaviors that do require improvement, but didn't find anything that was systemic sexual or psychological harassment at the studio.
So a lot of this was focused on Darveaux, and the report acknowledges that there was an incident involving him in 2019 at a party. And the blog post that they posted, that Scavengers posted, says that management moved, quote, swiftly but discreetly, and that Darveaux stepped down as CEO at that time. The consultant report says that failure to communicate to staff led to the perception that no action was taken, which was a huge, huge, huge mistake they identified.
Absolutely.
Darveaux is now in a non-managerial role prototyping a new project. Now, there's a problem here.
Oh, goodness. I wonder what the problem could possibly be. Could it potentially be that the new CEO, Amélie Lamarche, and the former CEO, Simon Darveaux, are in a relationship?
Or were in a relationship. It's not clear if they still are, but that is one issue. The other issue is, if he did commit these acts, why is he still there at all? And that's the thing, is he should have been removed, because even having him in the environment, you can't just change those power dynamics overnight. Sure, he's not CEO, but he's in charge of a new project.
What's going to happen when it moves out?
Yeah, what's going to happen when he moves out of the, when that project moves out of the prototype phase? Is he going to stay as creative director? Is he going to climb back up the ranks slowly? Is this the white man to doing wrong and then creeping back in slowly, slowly, slowly?
I mean, I really do feel like these dynamics needed to be needed to be cut off.
Yeah.
He needed to be not just removed from management duties, he needed to be removed from the company.
Yep. And Amélie Lamarche, who, as you said, was the new CEO, was suspended at the time, has been reinstated as a result of the report. So hopefully things will change, but...
And listen, as two people, in fact, that are in a relationship publicly and run a company together. You are not responsible for my actions, and I am not responsible for your actions. Nope. So I want to make sure that I'm making that clear, even though from an optics perspective, it looks not great.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's just an optics thing. It's not that Lamarche is... Well,
especially if they're not in a romantic relationship anymore. But still, the whole thing, if I'm an employee at that studio, and okay, now we're finding out that action was taken, but you just bumped him, you demoted him, and he's still here, and he's still in the office. That doesn't change the groping and the sexist remarks. It just changes the power dynamic slightly, slowly.
But only kind of. And right. really, the power dynamics are only going to be allowed to change through churn, through employee churn. Yeah. And through that cultural knowledge being lost.
Yep. So they made a lot of mistakes. We'll see what happens. I have a feeling this is not the last we've heard of this.
I would tend to agree. In also interestingly frustrating news.
Yes.
Roblox has been sued to the tune of more than $200 million by the National Music Publishers Association. Variety has reported that the lawsuit identifies songs by Ariana Grande, Imagine Dragons, Deadmau5, Ed Sheeran, The Rolling Stones, and more that are used unlicensed in the Roblox metaverse.
The lawsuit was announced at the NMPA's annual meeting, citing Roblox's monetization as part of the problem. NMPA President David Israelite said at the meeting that Roblox earned, quote, hundreds of millions of dollars by requiring users to pay every time they upload music onto the platform, taking advantage of young people's lack of understanding about copyright, and then claiming that Roblox takes virtually no action to prevent repeat infringement or alert users to the risks they are taking.
Okay, that's tough. And we're going to come back to this at the end of this story because we got to talk about it from the Twitch perspective.
Absolutely. Now, the other thing is you got to remember the music industry is seeing a huge change in revenue, especially after live events were gone for over a year.
Yeah.
And are now slowly coming back. I mean, heck, we were slated to see Lady Gaga in August last year and then this year and then it got bumped to next year.
Hopefully it won't get bumped again.
So Roblox responded, issuing a statement that Variety published saying that it does not tolerate copyright infringement and says that such infringement as detailed by the NMPA is against its community rules. Now remember, there's having rules.
And then there's educating.
And enforcing.
And enforcing, yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely. So Roblox also says that it uses filtering technology to detect and prohibit unauthorized recordings and also responds to DMCA takedown requests. The platform says it takes actions against repeat offenders. I don't know what that means.
Neither do I. But Roblox does say that it employs more than 1,000 human moderators. Those poor people.
It's actually closer to 3. I just had a conversation with someone over at Roblox very recently where we were talking about content moderation. Mm. Now, maybe it's 1,000 people that look over every audio file, but I think in total they have close to 3,000 content moderators working for Roblox.
And that's not an easy job, as we've talked about before. Certainly so those not. People screen and review every audio file uploaded. I'm not sure about the process here. Does it get to go live and then gets reviewed, or does it not get to go live until it goes through review?
Yeah, I'm not super certain what the nitty-gritty of the content moderation actually looks like, mm-hmm. but I talked about it from a user safety perspective rather than a DMCA perspective, but it would be another interesting conversation to talk about, so mm-hmm. perhaps for the future. So let's flip the switch. Mm-hmm. Let's flip the switch and bring it back to Twitch.
Of course.
So Israelite also called out Twitch, which has been under fire, suffering a barrage of DMCA takedown requests, as we've previously discussed on the show. Now, what Twitch does differently than Roblox is they actually do have community, not just this goes against our terms of service, this goes against community rules, they actually have like Twitch creator camp, yeah, essentially. Boot camps. Yeah, they have these little boot camps that when you start up your Twitch stream for the first time, which Mike and I did obviously with Virtual Economy like mm-hmm. last week, you know, we got to see what some of those tutorials look like.
Yeah.
So I think that you need both a proactive and reactive approach when it comes to copyright infringement, especially when it comes to copyright infringement in the United States. Y'all are litigious as heck.
We really are. So that's going to be interesting to watch, given how big Roblox is, given how well the stock is performing. You know, we've seen this all the way back in the Napster days. The RIAA and now the NMPA are hungry for a piece of that pie. And if they don't feel like they're getting their due, they're going to call the lawyers in.
Yep. Don't love that.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what I do love?
What do you love?
I love NPD reports.
Matt Piscatella, call us, baby.
Well, I mean, like, Matt's been on our podcast.
I know. So. No, really, Matt. Call me, baby.
Wow. That's...
It's a good thing we're friends.
Wow, that's a lot. That's a lot to handle. That's a lot to deal with. Please forward all questions, comments, and upsets directly to Mike. Do not come to me. Go directly to Mike.
That's fair. Come directly to me. Baby.
So, wow. All right. Despite last month's dip, May inched out with a small increase. Spending in the U.S. in mm-hmm. May was up 3% year over year, reaching $4.5 billion. Year-to-date spending is up 17% to $24 billion.
And that's only going to continue. I think we're going to be up significantly. I think that the margins are going to start narrowing through the summer a little bit.
I think so, too. Gains were across subscription, console, PC, and VR.
So what you'll see there is their software down a little bit. Accessories are going to be down. We'll talk about that. But hardware sales were up 5% year over year to 244 million. Year to date hardware sales are 1.9 billion. That's up 36% from a year ago due to new consoles. That's despite the shortages.
The shortages have been really brutal. But you know what's awesome?
I know what you're going to say. Because
you know what's awesome? Nintendo continues to eat everybody's lunch.
Mm-hmm.
Nintendo is the king boo of eating everybody's lunches.
It is. I love it.
Yeah, the king boo of eating everyone's lunches because he's king of the hill.
King of the hill.
In terms of both dollars and units, the Switch is king for 30 months running. And obviously it leads the year so far.
All right, let's talk about some software. Note that some of these, including Nintendo games, do not include digital sales. Here's the biggie at the top of the list.
The biggie?
This is huge.
This is so good, though. So Resident Evil Village led the month on both consoles and across the Steam titles that NPD is permitted to track, which is incredible given the fact that it is an M-rated horror game.
It's both of those things together. Because obviously we've seen M-rated games do exceptionally well. Grand Theft Auto. It's the horror game because that self-limits a lot of people.
It does, absolutely, because there are plenty of people out there that look at Resident Evil and they're like, that's way too scary for me. And quite frankly, considering we are most of the way through Resident Evil 7 Biohazard, I get it.
It's really scary, man.
It's super scary, but we're so excited because we get to play Resident Evil Village soon. I think we have like another handful of hours left.
Well, we have all the DLC for RE7 too, which is continuing the story.
But
anyway,
point being is that this is an exceptional thing for a horror game to do.
Yes. Yeah, this really stood out to us as kind of huge. Resident Evil Village is now the second bestseller of the year across platforms in the U.S. behind Call of Duty Black Ops Cold War.
Wow, and I love that in our notes, it's just...
Cod Blops Cow.
It's just Cod Blops Cow.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
Yep.
All right, so Mass Effect Legendary was number 2, which is number 2 on Xbox, number 3 on PlayStation.
Yep, MLB The Show only dropped to number 3 from number 1 in its debut month last month.
New Pokemon Snap was number 5, down from number 3, but was number 1 on Switch.
Of course it was. Mortal Kombat 11 holding strong at number 6.
Mario Kart 8 up from 10 to 7, and let's be real, that's awesome. I love Mario Kart. Mm-hmm. I've been kicking our kids' butts in Mario Kart, except in Mirror. I'm terrible at Mirror.
Returnal, again, that's a PS5 exclusive, so it's not just on from one Housemarque console family. It's on one console.
One whole console. That's
that has been in short supply. So this is really good for Housemarque and Sony. Returnal holding strong at number 8. Very interested to see where Ratchet and Clank lands next month.
Animal Crossing is back in the top 10 at number 9 after being in 15th spot last month. Now, the big bummer about Animal Crossing is that we're in year 2. We don't know what's going on with content updates since the last major content update that we had, which didn't quite have enough to really bring people back. I wish Nintendo would tell us more. They said they had 3 years planned out for content.
I think COVID has really done a number on this.
I would imagine so. But you know what? I'm still an Animal Crossing fan. I still want more stuff on my island.
Mm-hmm. Minecraft is back in the top 10 also. It's at number 10, up from number 14 last month.
Absolutely. Biomutant debuted at number 16, number 8 on PlayStation, and 9 on Xbox.
So that's really interesting. Days Gone, this one's hilarious. Days Gone is up from 247th place in April to 21st place thanks to the PC release. And Sony does need to take notice here.
Absolutely. And we talked about this, I believe, in our last episode where we discussed Sony thing. It was during our E3 wrap-up, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
That we discussed how Jim Ryan tends to see, like, oh no, it was,
Herman Hulse. It was Herman Hulse discussion.
That's right. So that was last week's news show. So like talking about how PC is still seen as wholly separate for them.
Mm-hmm.
And while I understand that from a mechanical perspective, because they literally do not own the operating system in the same way that Microsoft owns Windows. So I get it, but also PC, come on.
Yeah. I think that they need to really get sharper about their timing. Because if Days
Two
Gone...
Years.
Yeah.
2 years.
If Days Gone had slipped down to 247th, think about 9 months a year after it came out coming to PC if they really don't want to do day and date, which
is fine. Which is fine. That's their philosophy. Mm-hmm. And there are big philosophical differences between all three of the major platform holders.
Yep. All right, last thing here, accessory spending was down 8% to $142 million, but year-to-date accessory sales are up 17% to $1 billion. Again, you sell new consoles, you're selling new accessories along with them.
Absolutely. Steering wheels are actually up 45% over last May, with the Logitech G920 as the best-selling wheel for the year so far.
I'm trying to figure out what game is motivating that.
I don't know. But it's certainly not Forza Horizons 5, which is possibly maybe I'm going to think about getting a wheel for my...
We can mount it to these desks.
Desk. But also, do I really need a wheel? The answer is yes.
The answer is yes. I'm wondering, though, if it's Forza Horizon 4 on Steam. That's motivating.
Could very well be. Forza Horizon 4 is such an exceptional game. It's so much fun.
Yep. All right. And now it is time for a relatively short investment interlude.
Not M&A Minute, because it's never a minute.
Even with only four.
Even with only four, it's never a minute. So, Voodoo, the mobile publisher behind games like Hole.io, has acquired marketing automation platform BidShake. BidShake launched in January 2020. No terms were disclosed.
And if you're interested about Voodoo, I wrote a piece on Variety.
It's a good
scathing piece about their cloning practices.
Yeah, it's actually very, very good. And I'm not just saying that because I'm deeply biased, even though I know I am.
Yeah. Electric Game Box, a company that installs immersive gaming pods for 2 to 6 players at retail locations, has raised $11 million in Series A2 funding.
But will you hire them to install it in our new house?
We don't need to, thankfully.
But also, what if we want it?
And what if we put bars on it and then we put the children in?
Oh no, that's not what I was
It's your gaming pod. Enjoy it, kids.
That's horrible. You've been playing too much Resident Evil 7.
Yeah. Welcome to the family, son. this brings total funding for Electric Game Box to $25 million. The round was led by Fillion, with participation from Brookfield Asset Management through its retail revitalization program, Index Ventures, and Activum SG. The funding will support expansion in the US and UK with 100 new locations in the next 2 years and 1,000 by 2026.
Why does that sound like the far-flung future when all it is 5 years down the road?
Let me have this dream.
It always sounds like the far-flung future whenever you talk.
26.
It's so weird.
Play Blood Dragon, Amanda. That's all I'm saying.
No, it's... Okay. Anyway, we're going to talk about Blanco's Block Party. I was really excited about this game. I actually still have it installed on my computer because I started playing it and I started messing around with it to see what it was all about. Mm-hmm. So, when it was originally announced, it looked like this combination of collectible, cute Funko Pop thingies that were called Blankos. And it was a sandbox game.
Yeah,
it looked
a little bit like Fall Guys.
Yeah, and it also kind of looked like it had that metaverse feel, right? Where you could build things in the game. Okay.
And it was everywhere during last year's Summer Game Fest.
Everywhere.
Every single show
had
Blankos. And a lot of repeats and stuff. Like if you saw one, you was like, okay, we've seen this before.
Right.
But it was literally everywhere
last summer. Which is what motivated me to go download it shortly after the Summer Game Fest. Mm-hmm. Or the Summer Game Mess, rather.
Yes.
Let's be real here. It was messy last year. Less messy this year. Very messy last year. But we have some bad news.
Yeah, we do.
It's effectively NFT the game.
Yeah. And here's the weirdest part about that. They're leaning into NFT as marketing when they should be leaning way away from it. And I know why. Go ahead.
Why then?
Because it's hot and investors are stupid.
Okay, I wasn't going to go that far.
Oh, I'm going that far. Because investors, this is chasing the trend.
This is the thing that we see all the time. And considering we had this conversation last news show about how NFTs have fallen 90%.
Mm-hmm.
90% since May. It's only been a month.
That's not to say we're not seeing these weird little spikes pop up, but here's the reality of the thing. It's great. You want to lean into it. You want to get that investment money, but everybody's watching, and all the journalists and all the players who were interested in your game last summer are taking a look at this and going, you just zeroed out my interest. Because we used to get press releases all the time, right? It was the Kickstarter bubble in 2012, 2013.
Yeah.
And then it was MOBAs. And then it was... blockchain, and now it's NFTs. And if you put those keywords,
and Battle Royale and Metaverse,
and you put these keywords in a press release, a journalist is going to look at this and go, at very best, they're just going to file it away, And at worst, they're just going to hit the delete button because it's not something they're going to be interested in. Because you want to know why? Readers don't give a crap about NFTs. In fact, they actively don't dislike them for the most part.
It's the same kind of thing with any kind of buzzwordy jargon nonsense. Yep. Readers don't care. They want to know, what is this game about? How is it cool? How is it for me?
Blockchain is, there's someone, we saw this, and I think we talked about this on the show. Oh, we're raising money for blockchain games. What the fudge is a blockchain game? Blockchain isn't a gameplay style. It's not a genre.
It's a technology. It's a piece of technology. And it is used in a lot of places quite successfully. Again, as we've talked about, Pokemon Go uses blockchain, right? To ensure that those items that you're trading, those Pokemon that you are trading back and forth, have those digital signatures.
Mm-hmm.
So that they're singular.
And they're validated. So they can't be spoofed. They can't be duped.
Exactly. Because you have shiny Pokemon and, you know, mm-hmm. you have Pokemon that are harder to catch in Pokemon Go.
And they have
that
specific levels and specific traits. And
absolutely. And so blockchain technology is super important. It's very, very, very useful, especially in games that allow trading, or they allow you to have unique items that are bound to your account.
Mm-hmm.
But consumers don't care. That's a developer thing. That's an investor thing. That's not for the people that play the games. They don't care about that. They just want to know how it's cool.
And I wish companies that are engaging in these technologies would get smarter about separating their IR from their PR.
That's a mood and a half, considering that developer Mythical Games has announced Series B funding in the amount of $75 million to drive adoption of playable NFTs through its game Blanco Block Party.
Playable NFTs. I swear I can feel the bile coming up. It's like,
the worst part of this is that if they had never used the jargon, if they kept the jargon out of it, and they're just like, these are your unique in-game personas, your unique in-game skins.
Yeah, we're only going to sell a limited number of them.
Well, and I was really...
Or this is a one of a kind.
Considering how many Funko Pops you and I own, like, clearly this is a game that is meant for collectors. We are collectors. Oh, we love collecting
things. I am bracing for impact of when Funko actually starts doing this.
Yeah, I hope not, because honestly, a lot of the folks that are working at Funko are really, really savvy, and mm-hmm. quite frankly, they are more concerned about creating cool toys and cool experiences with their toys than they are worried about.
They have investors too, though.
Yeah, I guess.
I can just imagine sitting in one of those meetings like, so what about this NFT thing? We could probably make a lot of money doing that. And they're like, oh God, I don't want to do NFTs.
I'm sure that the creative team over at Funko would be like, and exceptionally no. So anyway, the round was led by WestCap with participation from 01 Investors and Gary Vaynerchuk's Vayner Fund, as well as existing investors including Galaxy Digital, Javelin Venture Partners, Alumni Ventures, and Strut Capital. I know what you're doing over there. I've met Gary V. He's just kind of an over-the-top human.
I'm not going to say what a Vayner Fund sounds like, but all right.
Michael!
It's Vayner Fund.
Gosh, anyone want to buy a mic? I'll sell them to you through NFT. Mythical's total raise is now $120 million. Get it together. We have a show to do.
All right, let's talk about that. If you sold somebody the NFT of me, you would still have the original.
Oh, crap.
They would just get a link to I don't know what. They would get a link to my website?
They would get a link to...
You own Mike now.
Yeah, but exactly.
The real Mike is still here in New Jersey.
Oh, no. No, I don't want to sell you the NFT. I just want to sell you the person.
Vayner Fund.
Terrible. Do the last story.
UK location-based VR company Otherworld has raised £2.9 million, that's $4.1 million US, to expand from its first location in Shoreditch, East London, to 5 more locations throughout the country. Additionally, Otherworld is looking for franchise partners in Germany and the US. The investment comes from unnamed, quote, leading venture capital funds. Now, what's interesting to me here is location-based VR had already been on the decline before COVID.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, and of course, location-based VR during COVID, no. So I'm wondering if we're going to see an uptick in location-based VR again,
or... So my thinking on this is probably yes. Mainly, and like, hear me out on this. People are going to find things novel again in going out. Arcades are going to be novel again. Amusement parks are going to be novel again. Location-based VR is going to be novel again. So we might see a very brief uptick, probably not skyrocketing like it was before, but we'll probably see a nice bump and then it'll plateau and, you know, potentially the bottom will fall out of it again. Mm-hmm. It really comes down to whether or not players are interested and where they're going to spend their time. Are they going to be going to location-based VR? Why are you looking at me like that? You're still thinking about Vayner Fund. Oh my god. And with that, we're taking a break.
Virtual Economy is an F-Squared initiative, and along with pro bono business consulting for up-and-coming developers, it's a way we are working to give back to the community that has already given us so much. To find out more about F-Squared and the services we can provide, including pitch prep, media training, mock reviews, and business strategy guidance, visit our website at fsquared.biz.
It's time for quick hits!
I didn't even say we were back yet.
But now you did, so... I did it.
Man, okay, fine. Anyway, so yes, it's quick hits time. Midboss has announced the Season of Pride, an annual streaming event celebrating LGBTQIA+ diversity in gaming. The Season of Pride takes place from July 1st through July 31st, otherwise known as Wrath Month, with a lead-up Steam sale running now through Wednesday, June 23rd.
David Pohlfeldt, head of Ubisoft Massive for 16 years, that's the studio behind The Division and the upcoming Avatar game and the upcoming Star Wars game.
The upcoming Star Wars game. Actually, that Avatar game looked really pretty. Yeah. I just don't know what it is.
Yeah. Pohlfeldt is stepping down. He's taking a 6-month sabbatical starting July 1st. A new leader has been chosen for the studio from outside the company, but because of issues with their current employer, they can't announce quite yet. After his sabbatical, Pohlfeldt will be returning in a, quote, strategic role.
This is burnout.
This is someone who has been doing this and has launched two very successful games for Ubisoft. They're going to be coming back. Obviously, we can't speak to everything that happens inside Ubisoft, but it is important to note that, especially given how much has been going on around Ubisoft's culture, Pohlfeldt has not been named. This is not related to that as far as we know.
But if I had to guess, yes. Based on 16 years of running this studio,
yes.
Bro's burnt out.
Yeah. Yeah, and The Division, you know, was a huge coup for Ubisoft. And absolutely. Division 2 refined that, and now I want to go back and play those games. So there's that.
Yeah, we have to wait for my dad's hip to heal because he wants to play The Division with us. Anyway, speaking of Ubisoft said that it is transitioning to a hybrid work system as we move through the end of the pandemic. A blog post attributed to new chief people officer, Annika Grant, says that the company will allow employees to balance in-office work with time working from home. However, there are some jobs that are, quote, incompatible with work from home and will be fully office-based. I'm not really sure what that is.
Yeah, they haven't determined exactly which jobs yet.
So some employees, however, will be eligible for full homework, including remote work.
Which is huge.
That's a big one. That's a big one. Over the next few months, managing directors will pick return to office dates, likely around September. Studio leaders will identify those roles that are fully office-based and those that are eligible for full remote. Ubisoft is also exploring a work-from-anywhere benefit that would allow employees to take 4 weeks of the year to work anywhere they want. Nomadic working being embraced in corporate?
Yep.
What is this life?
It's pretty great. Hazelight Studios' latest co-op game, It Takes Two, has passed 2 million copies sold. The game was released, like the previous game from Hazelight, No Way Out, via EA Originals, which passes all net revenue on to developers after the publisher recoups. So congrats to Hazelight. We should probably play that one.
I feel like I need to, yeah, maybe.
It's a Joseph Farris game, and I know that he's an interesting fellow.
Yeah, I think that's probably the kindest thing that I can say.
Yep.
GTA Online is saying bye-bye to its original platforms. Rockstar has announced that the money printing machine is nearing the end on the Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3. You have just a few more months to enjoy Los Santos on those platforms as it will be sunset on December 16th. Happy birthday to our daughter. Mm-hmm. Shark cards will stop being sold on those platforms after September 15th. The campaign, however, will not be affected.
So if you really want to go back and play GTA 5 on one of its original platforms, y'all, just the story, you can do that. But y'all, you can also do it on PC. You can do it on PS4 and Xbox One, and soon you'll be able to do it on PS5 and Xbox Series consoles.
Yeah. So just saying. Maybe it's time.
Yep. Niantic has announced a new mobile AR game, Transformers Heavy Metal. I did not squee at all about this, he lied. The game is planned for a soft launch in select territories before launching worldwide. Niantic is not developing, though. It's teamed up with developer Very Very Spaceship and, of course, Hasbro. Now, what's interesting to me, they didn't specifically say this, but remember when Niantic had that kind of game jam pitch thing where it's like you could use our geolocation things and then you could pitch things? I wonder if this, yes, if this came out of it.
That would be so, so cool. You know me. I adore Niantic and what they do. I think that they are on the bleeding edge of what video games can be on mobile. Are you done? I know you're so excited about Transformers.
More than meets the eye.
All right. So Niantic aside, moving on. Super Rare Games has announced a new line of games called Super Rare Shorts. What makes them special? All of the games will only be released as physical Switch carts at first. Super Rare plan to keep these to physical only. No eShop, no Steam, nothing else, just physical on Switch. Mm-hmm. However, community feedback led to a shift in plans. The games will be released on itch.io 6 months after physical release to ensure wider distribution and, quite frankly, preservation. Mm-hmm. There are multiple games in development, and the first is a new, as yet unnamed game from Ita developer Glass Revolver. Pre-orders will be open for a month. And then that's it. They're gone.
The physical ones, anyway.
Yeah, but you can wait 6 months and play it on itch instead.
We have a couple of CD Projekt stories. CD Projekt has confirmed that data from the ransomware breach has been leaked on the internet. The company says it does not know for certain, but has reason to believe that information related to current and former employees and contractors is out in the wild.
The company says
it is working with, quote, an extensive network of appropriate services, experts, and law enforcement agencies, including the General Police Headquarters of Poland. And they've also contacted Interpol and Europol.
That's some really scary stuff there. And you know what, CD Projekt Red employees, I really hope you stay safe out there because you don't deserve to have your personal information out in the wild.
Yeah.
And honestly, solidarity. Mm-hmm. Speaking of CD Projekt, Cyberpunk is finally making its return to the PlayStation Store on June 21st. However, and this is a large caveat, don't expect a great experience. Sony told IGN, quote, users will continue to experience performance issues with the PlayStation 4 edition while CD Projekt Red continues to improve stability across all platforms. Sony Interactive Entertainment recommends playing the title on PS4 Pro or PS5 for the best experience.
Oof.
Yeah, I'm going to set that all the way to maximum oof.
Oof.
You just needed to, like, get right up there.
Yes.
Wow.
The Finnish games industry brought in $2.9 billion in revenue in 2020 with 100 new games released last year. That's 9% growth year over year. Mobile is the biggest platform for the country. Additionally, 3,600 people were hired to work at Finnish devs just last year in 2020.
That's incredible. Mm-hmm. That is some serious growth. BioWare interim general manager Gary McKay is no longer interim. He now has the job permanently. McKay joined the studio in January 2020 as head of development operations. He takes over for Casey Hudson, who left in December, along with Mark Dara.
Mm-hmm. Motherboard has reported that EA has also suffered a massive data breach, although this one was very, very targeted. An EA representative confirmed to the outlet that a group of hackers stole 780 gigabytes of data that included source code for FIFA 21 and the Frostbite engine. Also included seems to be software development kits. This was a really interesting story on Motherboard about how a lot of social engineering allowed this to happen.
It's a great story. You should definitely go read it. We dropped it into the source links because it is fantastic. The folks at Motherboard.
Did we?
Yeah, I think we did.
If not, we'll go drop it in the forums.
It's too good of a story.
It's too good of a story, yeah.
You absolutely have to read it. It was such a trip. And quite frankly, this is why, you know, we talk about specialty journalism, especially among tech. Motherboard is some of the best in the industry when it comes to reporting on hacks.
Absolutely.
It's just super, super cool.
Although the funniest thing I saw was a bunch of current and former EA people saying, so at what point do they just look at Frostbite and decide they want to give it back?
That's messed up.
It's really messed up.
Yeah, definitely super messed up. Okay, so yeah, you should definitely go read that Motherboard story because it is really good stuff. Battle Royale's maturation means that we are seeing big players move away from the genre as a game mode. Part of the Battlefield 2042 announcement, we know that EA has decided to not include Battle Royale. Battlefield V/5 mm-hmm. had a Battle Royale mode added after launch called Firestorm.
Yeah, it was announced during the roll-up, or the rollout, or the lead-up. Words mean things. But yeah, it didn't come out until after launch. Bethesda has also announced that it's phasing out Fallout 76 Battle Royale mode Nuclear Winter. It'll be removed in September, and the publisher says that player interest has dwindled, and maintaining and innovating on Battle Royale and Fallout 76 has been challenging, while also supporting the adventure mode, which is the core mode of Fallout 76.
That is 100% what they should be focusing on, is making sure that the adventure mode with its seasons continue to be, you know, what they want it to mm-hmm. be. Now, like, listen, we know that there are plenty of other companies out there that have found success with the Battle Royale model. You know, for Fortnite, Battle Royale was launched as a completely separate game.
After its PvE mode saved the world.
Correct. Call of Duty Warzone is now a free-to-play, self-perpetuating thing. But what this really does come down to is that Battle Royale all by itself is no longer a game changer.
Yeah, it was really interesting to watch. Obviously, PUBG was one of the first big Battle Royale games. There was there was the one game that launched, and then they launched a sequel, and then they unlaunched the sequel, and then came back. What the heck was the name of that game? Do you remember?
No, I know exactly what you're talking about, because I remember either reporting on it or reading on it.
Yeah, I played it. Yeah, so Battle Royale obviously has, you know, there have been standalone games, but when you look at how these things typically roll out, when you have AAAs start to get involved, it's like, how can we add this? It's going back to the whole bullet point multiplayer phase in the 360 PS3 era.
Do you remember that? Do you remember how everything had to have multiplayer?
Yep. Oh, we need to have multiplayer, because if we don't have multiplayer, people don't want to pay the money because it doesn't have any staying power. It doesn't have longevity or replay.
Exactly.
Which, of course, we figured out that stopped happening along the way because tacked on multiplayer was often bad.
It was often very bad. Now, however, tacked on multiplayer that was very good. We're talking Assassin's Creed Brotherhood here, people. Mm-hmm. That was tacked on multiplayer. That was brilliant.
So what we're seeing here, before we close on this, is this maturation of Battle Royale and people realizing, hey, we either can't or don't want to spend the resources to innovate and have a release cadence that fits what players need and want.
Because players are expecting full investment. They want those constant updates. They want the dedication that outpaces the whole, like, one of many modes. They want Battle Royale as the thing. Mm-hmm. And it's okay that they want that as the thing. But if the companies and corporations and development teams aren't able or willing to put that money or put those resources towards making that a fully fleshed out thing, no point in having it at all.
Yep. And those were quick hits.
I'm so used to saying, and now it's a break. I have to.
Why don't we instead break down what's going on with Bobby Kotick?
Oh man, this is my favorite. I love talking about Say on Pay. Okay, so Activision held its annual meeting, but it has delayed the Say on Pay vote. So Mike, take us through some of the background here.
Sure. As you might recall, there's an investment group called CTW. They've been leading the charge against excessive executive pay. Last year, they targeted Activision and EA.
Yep.
Activision's annual meeting was scheduled and took place on June 14th. It was scheduled to have that Say on Pay vote as part of the meeting. And the shareholders... So remember that Say on Pay is an advisory vote. It is regulated by the federal government. The companies need to ask investors, shareholders, how they feel about a compensation package. Yeah. There is an advisory vote that's taken, and then the company can just ignore it if they so choose. But ignoring shareholder will, especially when it comes to executive compensation, is not typically a good idea.
No.
So what ended up happening was they bumped it.
They did. So they ended up bumping it. And also, if you'll recall, Bobby Kotick has accepted a 50% pay cut, but CTW says that it is not enough due to the excessive bonus compensation.
In addition, the length of his contract. So this is this. It's
that's
like,
the thing that really gets my
goat. And we're going to talk about this. So, their vote is now scheduled for June 21st. Activision also said in a blog post on its IR site that it accused CTW of making, quote, misleading statements without naming them specifically. Although it then goes on to, and we'll talk about it.
Oh boy.
So Activision also says that lowering Kotick's salary puts him in the bottom 25th percentile of CEOs in the company's peer group. They also say that they have tied 95% of Kotick's compensation to performance, reduced the maximum payout by 40%. He earned nearly $150 million in 2020. That's up from $30.1 million in 2019. So he had a 400% increase. So lowering that by 40% doesn't seem like that much.
It really doesn't.
So here's the big thing. So CTW said that Activision has had typically low approvals for its say on pay vote.
Correct.
So what Activision said is, well, that's not true, because in 2019 we had 82% approval, and 2018 we had 92.1% approval.
But. In 2020, the say on pay vote only passed with 57%.
Yep. And then if you go back even further, before those two abnormal years, in 2017, 59.7%, 2016, 66.3%, 2015, 65.4%, and 2014, 69.8%. So pretty much, at best, they're getting a D+, maybe a C- if you round up on the 69.8.
Well, I mean, like, that's just a C.
From shareholders, yeah.
That's just a C in Canada, but okay.
Yeah.
But go off, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so CTW did issue a statement on June 7th clarifying its position. So here are a few of the excerpts. The Compensation Committee did not address longstanding shareholder concerns about executive pay practices at Activision by extending CEO Kotick's contract by less than 2 years. Given the repeated opposition to CEO Kotick's pay over the years, shareholders should expect to see a long-term reform of his compensation over a greater period than merely a year. The CEO's 2021 equity award will accelerate at maximum payout level, leaving most of the compensation reductions to only fully apply to 1 year, 2022, and as such may only cover the equity award for next year.
So essentially what CTW is saying here is, okay, you gave him an extension on his contract that's like, what, 2 years, and he could renegotiate it all up after attention is elsewhere in 2023. So it could be, oh, we're going to appease everybody for like 1 year.
I think CTW is going to keep the pressure on. I don't think they're going to let up, because honestly, that's what their job is. They're a watchdog.
Additionally, the extension overlaps Kotick's existing shareholder value creation incentive, which has already been met. So he's already like guaranteed to get it, which means that there is no further performance incentive. He's already got it.
And CTW has also pointed out that Kotick received his 2021 bonus in 2020, and he has already received payouts that dwarf his reduction through 2023.
Which is what we pointed out exactly. From the 2019 to the 2020.
It's just banana pants. This whole thing is complete. I'm like, it's honestly, these numbers are bonkers. No one person should be making $150 million.
Especially since, I mean, okay, great, they've got Call of Duty, but Activision's offerings have been dwindling and dwindling. There's so many eggs in the one basket.
And quite frankly, if they even fail to deliver on one Call of Duty, that's it.
Yeah. I mean, again, is it likely that that's going to happen? No, but that risk exists.
No, that they do. It's not likely to happen considering the pedigree of the studios working on the games.
Well, and we're going to talk about that. I mean, we talked about this in, you know, in another lens with EA, and we're going to talk about that at the bottom of the show. So risk is such an important piece of this puzzle.
Of course.
And
all corporations are risk averse.
Yep.
All
absolutely.
Of them are risk averse. And, you know, managing risk is part of what a CEO is supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of it. A CEO's job is to steward the company forward, creating new opportunities while managing risk.
I will say this, in the decade plus that I have been covering the industry, Activision has gotten less and less interesting with every year, less and less creative, innovative with every year.
Yep.
They, you know, we talk about Take-Two being the most risk-averse company in the industry. Activision's not far behind, and they're boring, quite frankly.
At least Take-Two is taking risks on its indies with Private Division.
Well, and Activision started to do that with bringing back the Sierra label, and then it just went away.
Which kind of sucks, because, listen, I grew up with Sierra games.
Yeah, they released, like, two games? Geometry Wars, and they released new Geometry Wars under the Sierra label, and they released the King's Quest games under the Sierra label, right?
The King's Quest game was really interesting, but that was it. That's all we got.
Garbage.
Total garbage. Speaking of garbage.
Good segue.
You know what? I've gotten better at them over the last year and a bit.
You have.
Let's talk about GameStop earnings, Mike.
Garbage. GameStop has finally named a new CEO and CFO as Chewy founder Ryan Cohen assumes the throne. Okay, well, he's now the board chairman.
Matt Furlong will be the company's new CEO, and Mike Recupero is...
Recupero?
It's such a weird last name.
Recupero. I mean, he's my favorite Pokemon.
It sounds like a Pokemon
Recupero,
name.
Recupero.
I love it, though. I think that's a really cool last name. I'm just so bad with last names. Actually, just names in general. Except for Mike and Matt, because there are several of those in my life. So anyway, Recupero is the new CFO. Both come from Amazon, which is right in line with Cohen's vision for GameStop.
Remember Ryan Cohen said, I think GameStop could compete with Amazon. I think you have drunk too much of the Kool-Aid, my friend. And by Kool-Aid, I mean, we'll go with bleach.
Oh, pfft, wow.
What are you doing? Oh, baby,
what is you doing? Yeah. Furlong was head of Amazon's Australia business and was previously a technical advisor to the head of Amazon's North American consumer business.
Yep. And Recupero was CFO of Amazon's North American consumer business and previously CFO of Prime Video.
GameStop had a strong first quarter in terms of sales, seeing a 25% year-over-year increase to $1.3 billion. Why? Because GameStop was slow to adapt to the pandemic, so its first quarter of last year was still slow.
Yes. I'm very interested to see what happens next quarter, especially because supply is not increasing at a rapid rate for Xbox Series and PlayStation 5 consoles.
It's not even just that. Sony is slowly choking out the retail side of the equation, so they are not likely to see a refresh, all that much of a refresh.
I mean, they're seeing a couple a month, but here's the thing. I mean, we talked about this during the V3 wrap-up, right? Jim Ryan has actually directly addressed the botting that happens. And it's
on a
really
lot of these retailer sites,
scalping and botting, it's really bad.
It's really bad, and it's bad for Sony, but it's not bad for the retailers because the retailers get paid no matter what. They don't care who it goes to.
And it's bad for Sony because that means fewer consoles in circulation, which means lower software sales.
Exactly.
So the company GameStop continues to manage the expense side of the equation. Remember, we talk about there's only a limit to how much expense cutting you can do. So selling, general, and administration expenses are down 4.2% year over year. And they're still showing operating and net losses.
They really are. Operating losses improved to a shortfall of $40.8 million from a loss of $108 million last year. Net loss also improved to a shortfall of $66.8 million from $165.7 million the year before.
Now, here's the thing. GameStop brought in $551.7 million from new share sales as the memification of the stock continues. So they took advantage...
Why wouldn't they?
The ridiculous stock sales. They made new issues, which of course pissed off the investment community and tanked the stock.
Well, that's the thing. Why wouldn't they take advantage
of this?
That's just smart corporate pivoting.
It pushed the stock price down by more than 25%. It's recovered a bit, but it's still like it does not mirror reality.
It doesn't mirror the value that GameStop is putting out into the world, frankly. So GameStop also confirmed that it is participating in an SEC probe. Mm-hmm. The SEC, on May 26, asked GameStop to provide documentation about the meme stock trading. Quote, "We are in the process of reviewing the request and producing the requested documents and intend to fully cooperate with the SEC staff regarding this matter. This inquiry is not expected to adversely impact us."
And I think that may have been true up until you brought in $550 million taking advantage of it. And I think that if...
And it's still... understandable from a corporate perspective, because why wouldn't you take advantage of it? And at the same time, ethically, that's kind of gross.
Yeah, it's a tightrope, right?
Yeah,
it's absolutely a tightrope. All right, we have one more story on
speaking of tightropes.
So we just talked about risk with Activision, right?
Yeah.
And we've talked about risk with EA, specifically around Ultimate Team.
Yeah, because they have so much of their revenue tied to Ultimate Team games. Mm-hmm. So what's going on?
So EA is currently piloting a new approach to loot boxes in FIFA Ultimate Team. Wes Ian Poole over at Eurogamer had a great report on this. Links in the show notes. So there's an event going on right now called Festival of Football.
Okay.
And the only packs they're selling right now are called preview packs. And here's how they work.
Okay.
You decide that you want to open a preview pack.
Mm-hmm.
You go through the animation. Remember, we've talked about the psychological impact, that the slot machine type sound effects and lights that happen when you open a loot box, right?
Uh-huh.
Ultimate Team has those. The pack opens, and you see everything that's in the pack, as you normally would. You have not yet purchased the pack. You get to make a choice about whether or not you go through with the purchase based on the contents.
Okay, so, and if you choose not to purchase, there's a cooldown timer.
Yep, you can, and that pack sits in the store for, it seems to be about 20 hours, which is a long refresh timer. It means you could reasonably open one of these a day.
And that's okay. I mean, I think that that's really an interesting way of handling this. And that certainly helps with the whole, no, you still get to open it. You just don't necessarily need to buy it.
Yes. And it's on a cooldown timer. They're the only packs that are available right now. If you decide to purchase it, then a new unopened pack refreshes into the store as well.
Sure.
And that's whether you purchase it with coins or points. You know, one of them is the earned currency. One of them is the paid currency.
So these preview packs, like Mike said, are currently only available during the Festival of Football, and the other packs, rather, will return after.
It's not clear if they're just going to add the other packs back, or if they're going to remove the preview packs. Because for me, there's some interesting testing going on. Clearly, this is a pilot program, right?
Oh, absolutely.
So phase one, take all the other packs away and see what happens with purchasing behavior. Right?
Yeah.
Do people still open as many packs? Do they purchase as many packs? Then phase two is, let's have a mix so that there is a choice right there. Do players opt to purchase sealed packs that you purchase and then you purchase and then see everything? Or do they opt to engage in the preview packs? And I think what's going to happen is they're going to pull data together because they're going to have to... This is what is the impact if we are forced to go down this route, which is still a loot box... But it is a more transparent loot box.
Which is what we tend to see coming out of Blizzard in territories like China, where they have to tell you what the odds are for each of these different items in each of these different loot boxes for games like Overwatch.
Right. And this is a step forward. Now, the question is, will countries like Belgium, change their perspective? Because right now, loot boxes, Belgium and a couple of other countries, you're not allowed to sell loot boxes.
No, you are not. Because they consider gambling.
Now, the question is, does this fix work in those countries? And they're going to have to go back to regulators and say, hey, look, here's what we did. We piloted this. We know it works because people get to get the option of seeing what's in one of those packs. The question is, how many people are going to say, I don't love that pack, but I guess there's something in there I could use, and hit yes, just so they can open another pack. Because there's still that serotonin issue, right?
Yeah.
Where if it's the opening that's juicing people's brains, then they're going to hit yes no matter what. And
man,
yeah.
That's a lot. I wonder if they're going to take that approach and they're just going to roll it out in just specific territories and that's it.
And that's the question. And how hard is that to do? I guess my question here is, like, obviously this is research and data gathering motivated.
Yeah,
I think. I mean, this to me says this is clearly a pilot program. This is clearly, and you and I have talked about this a lot, EA has to be planning for the end of loot boxes. It may never come. Regulation might not get to that critical point, but they have to plan
Maybe
for it.
Maybe not in North America, but it is certainly getting there in Europe. And considering how popular FIFA Ultimate Team is in Europe, FIFA's are like that. That's like the game.
Yeah, and I think if the UK looks at it and says, no, this is a problem and we're not going to allow it, I think that's the domino. Not to say that the UK is better than the rest of Europe.
No, certainly not.
But I think that the UK in particular is a key territory for FIFA.
I think so too.
And it does tip that domino, and then I think a lot of other things file. And if the European Commission looks at it, and of course that applies to the entire EU, and says,
Hard no.
Now they haven't yet.
But there's no guarantee that they won't.
Whew.
I think we got through it.
Under an hour, even.
Look at us go.
Yeah.
It's almost like we're professionals or something, but don't tell anyone. Because they'll have bigger expectations of us, and we just want to go play video games.
Yep.
So thank you for listening to the Virtual Economy Podcast. This has been episode 90. We are now 10 episodes away from episode 100.
Holy moly pants.
That's bananas.
We'll see if we can have Bobby Kotick on.
Can we not? Can we not? I don't want to spend a full...
Bobby, what do you do with your money besides hang out with Jeffrey Epstein?
Oh, aside from saying the soft part loud.
Whew. All right. Hiring dirtbag Republicans.
Ah, don't love that.
Not all Republicans are dirtbags, but the ones they're hiring.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, they are.
All right, so you can follow us on Twitter at VirtualEconCast. I am at Amanda Farrow.
I am at Footerish, FUTTERISH.
You can subscribe to our RSS feed at virtualeconcast.com. You can also listen to us on Spotify, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Pocket Casts. I always forget this last one.
Pocket Sand.
Oh man, Pocket Sand. We'd love it if you had as good of a time listening to this episode as we did recording it. You can tell we have a good time recording this because we are goofballs.
Yes.
If you enjoyed yourself, we'd love it if you would subscribe and
listen to the dogs.
Listen to the dogs. That's always fun. They're yip barking again.
I have no idea what's going on.
I love that our dogs are just slowly losing their minds. So anyway, if you want to review the show, we would love that too. Welcome to our dogs. This is our life. It is chaos.
And now they're outside.
Everything is bad, actually.
What the poops?
That's probably what's happening out there, Michael.
Oh.
Okay, anyway, continue.
Yeah, so if you have questions about our dogs or anything that we might talk about on the show, you can DM us at Virtual Econcast. You can also shoot us an email at podcast@fsquared.biz, or if you have something super secret that you want to talk to us about, Amanda and I both have Signal. You can DM us at the Virtual Econcast Twitter account or our individual Twitter accounts, and we'll hook you up with the number.
Absolutely.
We also launched a Twitch channel.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. Yeah. How could I forget about that? That was like our entire week last week.
Yes. Twitch.tv/virtual economy. We're going to be doing more there. We are gearing up, hopefully, to start live streaming the show on a weekly basis with better audio.
Our dogs are still always going to be in the background, yeah, so you will have to contend with that.
Well, that was a joke back from when I was on the Game Informer podcast with Matt Helgeson a whole bunch of times. The dogs would always, there would always be a dog cameo. Let's see. We also have, if you like the show and want to support us, we are working towards getting transcriptions done still. We do need some additional support. We have a Ko-fi link, ko-fi.com/virtual economy.
And I'm going to be selling stickers on there.
Yeah.
They're very fun. And We're going to start posting like exclusive content, not the podcast. The podcast is always going to be for everyone.
Yes.
But like exclusive merchandise, exclusive, you know, content when we have time. What is time even? I'll
ask me in August when I'm playing Ratchet and Clank.
Yeah. I'm taking all of August off. But I'm not taking this week off. So we will be back next week. Remember to wash your hands, stay hydrated, and be good to one another.
We'll be back next week with the dogs.